I would challenge coaches, you know, that they don't know how much players look up to them, how powerful their words are to them. Take the time to get to know their players, you know, show them some interest in their life outside of baseball. I feel like in my experiences, maybe not some of the most talented teams, but some of the teams that played the hardest for us might have been the teams that they knew how much we cared about them. And it's amazing how hard a kid will play for you if he believes in his core that you love him. I think that there's something to be said for that.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
Broadcasting from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, welcome back or welcome to our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. This is your home for certified audio gold and your podcast destination where you come to learn and grow. We are wrapping our arms around the opportunity to challenge ourselves as leaders, and that's what this podcast is all about. You're in great company here with our loyal listeners, an egoless group that can't digest enough baseball knowledge. If that sums you up as well, welcome home and welcome to the show. Connect with us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest at ABCA1945. Always feel free to reach out to me directly on Twitter at CoachSheets3 or by email Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. We are in the business of growing baseball and serving our member coaches around the world, so let us know how we can help you out. It's always great to hear how these shows are hitting you on the other end of the call, but we also want to hear creative ideas that you have for us, how we can better serve coaches around the world, so we look forward to hearing from you guys on that. Don't forget to subscribe, review, and share, always with the reminders. Hit that subscribe button on your phone, your computer, your tablet. That way, every single Tuesday, this show will be waiting for you on your time. Leave us a review on there. We love 5-star ratings. It helps more people find the show. And please share this podcast. Pump these links out through your network like so many others have before you. Your sharing of a resource could positively change the direction of another coach's career. How about sharing this show with your players? The percentages are in your favor. You are coaching a future coach right now. So it's all about growing baseball, challenging more people to find new ways to learn, and we appreciate your help on that, guys. We've made a concerted effort here in the National Office to better serve every single demographic in baseball, and the travel baseball realm has felt our push. We've added a travel baseball coaches meeting at our national conventions. We formed a new travel baseball coaches committee with representation around the country, plus assisting ABCA partners like Wilson Premier and Triple Crown Sports with their events so we can be more visible around these coaches and their organizations, and that's been beyond positive for us. So with today's guests, our very first travel baseball coach on the show, and it's someone I've been fortunate enough to spend some time with and truly come to respect his approach to coaching and helping players and their families. We're talking with Jeff Petty, the president and CEO of the famed Canes Baseball Organization. He joins our show and truly pulls back the curtain on how they've built one of the premier groups in the country. So inside this show, we get Jeff to open up on the birth of the Canes, how this group came to fruition, but also the attention to detail and the superior player experience that they offer their guys, plus how he continues to learn and grow as a coach and as a leader, and his why in coaching. His energy bus being driven by relationships with his players and helping them and their families find their right fit for college baseball. It's a powerful show, so let's not waste another second. Let's dive in headfirst and connect with the leader of the Canes baseball organization, Jeff Petty, as he joins us on this week's show. And get ready, coaches. This great show is coming at you right now. Coaches, thanks for dialing into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. We've got a fantastic episode on deck for you today. We're going to be connecting with the president and CEO of the Canes Baseball Organization, one of the top travel baseball organizations in the country. We're going to be connecting with Coach Jeff Petty. Jeff, thanks for jumping on the call with us.
Thanks a lot for having me, Sheets.
We're excited to do this, man. Again, our first really time spent inside this travel ball circuit, and to do it with your organization and what you guys have done. And we're going to get into all that as we open up this conversation. But where we like to start, Jeff, we were just talking before we got recording, your ABCA experience over the years, your convention attendance, just how much this organization, this fraternity has done for you as a coach. Can you expand upon that?
Yeah, I mean, first off, I'd like to say, you know, I think I speak for a lot of people, you know, that time of the year, I think, you know, all of us kind of yearn to get to Thanksgiving and Christmas and enjoy those holidays with our families. And then, you know, we're away from baseball during those times, but kind of when the ball drops, it's time to, I think all of us are gearing towards baseball and we're starving for it. Mm-hmm. And then to be able to come there and run into the people and then meet people, the relationships and the new relationships you gain, the value with that is just unbelievable. Not to mention, I mean, some of the best talks I've ever heard in my life are right there at that convention. To touch on, I heard Tim Corbin talk after he won his national title.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting there and I had never been so locked in to a 20-minute talk in my life.
Right.
And I remember texting him after the talk and telling him just how powerful it was and how it just hit home with me on just so many things that he spoke about.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know he's busy and he sits there on the front row and takes notes the whole convention, which I think is amazing. He never gets up from his seat. And he texts me right back.
Yeah.
And just said, thank you, Jeff. You don't know how much that means to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking to myself, man, you know, I'm just a travel baseball coach and here he is, you know, I just look up to that guy.
There's
and I've had lots of my players go play for him.
Yeah.
And then even like Matt Diggs talk this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was powerful.
Yeah. Yeah.
On so many levels. So I can't say enough about the ABCA experience. And then the vendors.
Mm-hmm.
In our business, you know, we're trying to put shoes on our guys and what they're gonna swing and what gloves they're going to, we've developed a really good relationship with Wilson, obviously, and being able to spend time with them and just the whole thing about it is just, I can't say enough about it.
I love it. Now that the Corbin speech is the infamous stepfather talk. And I think that is one that's been referenced on this show quite a bit. It's referenced within coaching circles a lot as a very powerful coach. If you're interested in that on abcavideos.org, look up that video from Coach Corbin. It will absolutely take you back, put you back in your seat, but also remind you, Jeff has just brought this back to you, is that, man, this is why I coach. This is why I do what I do.
Absolutely. I mean, at the time, you know, I had a little girl and I wasn't with the mother, you know, and it's not to get into all that, but it wasn't just all baseball, you know, and he's not all about baseball. He develops people. That's evident for sure.
It's awesome. Now let's do this for our coaches that are listening to the show. Let's really open up your career in baseball. I think it's always great to give context of where you're from, where you played, and obviously your growth inside of baseball to right now leading the Canes baseball organization.
Yeah. I mean, I was pretty much, I had basically a baseball in my crib. You know, my dad, dating back to his dad, he actually played some growing up with Mickey Mantle in Oklahoma.
Oh, wow.
You know, and then my dad played. He was a good high school player, went on and played in college, junior college level. Just enjoyed playing baseball, loved the game. And, you know, I remember my dad pulling me out of school when I was in it was in 1991, whatever year that was. I was in elementary school, whatever graduation class I was at that time. In 1991, he pulled me out of school in the middle of the day. It was a surprise. It was like lunch. Here's my dad comes walking in. He pulls me out of school. And we were living in Charleston, South Carolina at the time. And we drove down to Atlanta. And this is the year in 1991 when the Braves were starting to be good.
Sure.
And they threw a combined no-hitter. And I caught a foul ball that day. It was just this crazy day that at the time, you know, I was in elementary school, baseball became like this giant for me because it's something I could share with my dad.
Wow.
You know, I grew up, you know, playing for him in Little League in Somerville, South Carolina. We moved in the eighth grade to Fredericksburg, Virginia. Well, the year before we moved to the area, Cortland High School, and the head coach was Rick Holcomb. Coach Holcomb, I think, won 5 state titles as a football coach, as a defensive coordinator, and won several district titles in baseball, regional titles. And the year before we moved there, they won the state championship in Virginia in baseball. So we're trying to figure out where we're going to move in the area to what high school we're going to go to. And Dad's like, well, this guy has a program. They won the state championship in 1995. This is where you're going to go to high school. And got there and as an eighth grader, you know, and got into the program. And my ninth grade year, I think there was 6 or 7 of us that played varsity baseball, came up all the way through and won the state championship our senior year.
Wow.
That's cool. For Coach Holcomb. Yeah, it was to this. I mean, to this day, winning that state championship with those 7 guys that you grow up playing with, come all the way through with, one of the best moments for me ever in baseball.
Sure.
You know, Coach Holcomb was, he had a winning program, and we were going to work out a season. It wasn't an option. You know, it kind of instilled at a young age that we're going to win. Sure. And this is what it takes to win. We're going to work, and getting those, you know, characteristics at a young age, I think helped me, but, you know, went on to play at UNC Pembroke, for Coach Paul O'Neill. Mm-hmm. And he was at Shenandoah. His stop, Shenandoah, was a Division III school. I think when he took the program over, they had 0 wins the year before he took it over.
Wow.
And then he took that program over, and they won the Dixie Conference his last year there, which was a good league back then. I mean, I believe you had NC Wesleyan in that league, and Mike Fox had just took the job at North Carolina, that's if right. I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And Methodist was in that league, I believe. I don't want to misquote it, but I just know it was a pretty good Division III league.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned that around and then got the job at Pembroke. And I got fortunate to go down there. But I had an injury-plagued career. I mean, freshman year, I think I saw action in like 25 to 30 games. But just tore ACL twice. And just it ended up just being that freshman year was about the only year I got to get on the field there. But my relationship with him stayed intact. And I mean, he's just been such a supporter of me when I came to him with the idea of, you know, my career was done. I wasn't going to play baseball anymore. And I gave him the idea of, you know, maybe coaching. And he's just always been there for me, dating all the way to back then.
Yeah.
And to now.
That's cool. Building this organization. And I think there's so much to be talked about in just what the Canes baseball organization represents. You're talking about you guys, and I know you're too humble to bring this up. I'm going to bring it up for you. When you talk about 10 perfect game championships since 2009, you guys have won 4 Wilson Premier Championships over the last 2 years. And you're just, in my opinion, as most coaches would say, I mean, you're one of the staples of travel baseball in terms of your organization. Everyone across the country knows who the Canes are. But I think for you in building this organization, give us the 30,000-foot overview of the Canes organization as a whole, but then also the model that you've used to really build upon.
Yeah, I mean, we've been real fortunate, you know, with where we're at and what we've been able to accomplish. And I think it starts with a culture of just, you know, going after the right players. And it's not necessarily all talent-based. I really believe that with the coaches we have in place, not just with the team I coach, but with our other pro teams that we have, we're team first, and it's not all about being seen by a college coach. I see that, you know, the travel, we'll get into the negatives of travel baseball, but you know, I think just putting kids in your uniform that really want to play college baseball. And I'm not talking about, you know, playing at Vanderbilt or South Carolina.
Right.
Sure. Everyone wants to do that, but yeah. I mean, if there's that kid that, you know, isn't good enough to play there, right? And he can really help a Division III program. I mean, some of the best baseball minds I've ever met are Division III coaches or junior college or whatever. And if the kid is really serious about playing baseball at the next level, whatever level that may be, and we think he's talented enough to do it, and he's doing the necessary things leading up to you know, his development, his, you know, is he working out? Is he taking his nutrition seriously? Mm-hmm. I mean, is this a pipe dream? Does his parents want this or does he want this?
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and finding those kids, those kids are easy to help because mm-hmm. they're helping themselves every day, you know, and, finding the right kid is a big deal, but, yeah, I mean, you know, we're real fortunate. Our general manager, Dan Gibson, shares the same viewpoint as me as of what kind of kid we're trying to bring in. Mm-hmm. And, he really works hard at not just putting any kid in our uniform. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, I think that's your base right there. And
that's
if you
right.
stay true to that, if you stay true to that, and you know, you don't just, I mean, I think we cut 300 kids last year, you know, and I know there's other organizations and it's nothing against them, but they'll take kids. If they show up to their tryout, they got a checkbook and a glove and they'll give them a uniform.
Right.
And that's just not what we're going to do.
You know, one thing, and especially it's been really cool the last 2 years for me on this side of the fence and spending time at the Wilson Premier events. And obviously you and I get a chance to connect, but I get a chance to spend time with and around your kids and your families and your coaches. And, you know, Rob Younce and I've become really close because of that relationship. And that's to a T, you explained it. But what I love about it, and I'll even accentuate it for you, is that you guys are about putting kids in the right fit for them. So it's not just about, hey, we're going to put these guys into high level Division I programs, whether they fit or not, or we're going to push. I mean, you can go through your website and see that you're putting guys in junior college, you're putting guys at Division III, Division II schools, but more importantly, you're helping them find the right fit. And I think that's a powerful platform to stand upon, Jeff.
And to extend on that, I mean, let's face it. Xavier Edwards, let's just say, our shortstop last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's the easy one, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he jumps off the page. Everyone wants that kid.
Sure.
It's the kid on our North team or our South team or our Central team, which, you know, to clarify, our South team is South Carolina. Our Central team is North Carolina and our North team is Virginia, Maryland area. Mm-hmm. You know, those kids, helping them find that fit, whether it be Randolph-Macon or Christopher Newport University or Elon or Furman, he's an academic kid and he really wants to get an education, and or those taking the time to figure those things out, a highly academic kid who wants to play in the Ivy League and getting him in front of, you know, the coach at Harvard or mm-hmm. whatever. I mean, that's where the attention to detail as far as helping them find the fit comes in. But also to extend on what I said earlier, I mean, if you take that kid at your tryout that wasn't very good, but he showed up and their parents are willing and eager to write you the check, but let's just be honest. I mean, he's just not really good enough. I mean, I don't foresee that he's ready to even play at a high level junior college or even a mid level junior college. Oh, and by the way, he's not really serious enough about it. And I think that's the thing that some kids have this thought in their mind that they really want to go play at the next level.
Right.
But when it comes right down to it, if they look at their daily routine and what they're doing each day, yeah. And I would challenge them that I don't know if they really are serious about going and doing it.
That's right. Those two things don't always match up. The want and then show me the actions. Yeah. That's a good point. You made reference to this, and I want to dive right into it head first because I know you're very straightforward as well. When we talk about travel baseball, that's certainly a hot-button topic. It's a hot-button issue, especially when you're talking with all the different demographics, whether it's retired coaches, current coaches, coaches that want to get into it, and then across every level from the high school coach, the youth coach, and then obviously guys that are just in it in an organizational level. There are positives, and there's certainly negatives to it, and I want to give you the platform just to open up. What do you see the positives that certainly you've gained through your experience with the Canes, but then what are maybe the negatives that coaches will throw at you as terms of how they view travel baseball?
Man, it is a hot button topic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always willing to go to the table and assess the negatives. You mm-hmm. know, I try to self-evaluate daily, maybe hourly. It's crazy, but
sure.
The truth of the matter is, there are some negatives. There are a lot of negatives. And I see where college coaches are coming from on it. You know, example would be, a college coach commits a kid, a pitcher, and he has 130 innings on his arm in 1 year. Mm-hmm. You know, 140 innings on his arm in 1 year when he's 16 years old. And, you know, it's some guys just trying to win some travel game, win some trophy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's not good. I look at some of the, you know, these teams that are thrown together with parents that are just enamored with their kids going and playing travel baseball, and the teams filled with kids that'll never play in college. Nothing against that, but everyone on their team was bound to be a fraternity brother wherever they're going to school.
Right.
And then they run into, let's say, our team and let's say Georgia on a Tuesday night. Well, you know, we got 25 kids on our roster. They're all committed to SEC, ACC schools. We run out of pitcher. There's 25 pro scouts there. We run out of Mackenzie Gore, who's a third pick overall, and they don't foul a ball off in three innings, and we score 15 runs, and the game's over before you blink. That's not good for anyone. That's not good for us. That's not good for those kids. That's not good for the evaluators that are there.
Right.
That's bad. I mean, I think of the positives with our team. You know, I think I look at our roster every year, 25 guys, like I said, all committed to this school, that school, and they get together and they push each other and they make each other better because of it. We travel the country. Our club does. So you take like a Mackenzie Gore, for instance. He had never been to Arizona. He had never been to the West Coast in his life. He's a small town North Carolina kid. Lo and behold, he gets drafted by the Padres. So he goes out there for spring training. He goes out there to, you know, and it's not his first time in Arizona. Mm-hmm. Joe Gray last year, he's a small town Mississippi kid. He's never been to Phoenix. I remember we were out at practice the first day we were out there at the Wilson Premier West. We were practicing at the Padres place, and Joe Gray's like, "Coach," he goes, "this heat out here is a different heat." You know?
Yeah. And, oh, and it was.
You know, it's just, exactly. But, you know, I mean, you never know. He might get stuck and extended 1 year, you
That's
know, or
right.
whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when they get drafted, I believe, I remember going and seeing Joe Rizzo, who was a first round pick. I remember being in town for the Perfect Game World Series in July, and he was there playing in a Mariners pickup game on the side field, and there was two people in the stands. I guess just those experiences that these kids get, going and traveling and seeing different things, I think it doesn't hurt them. I think it helps them. And also, I would say that you play baseball, if you match up the right teams, you know, if we match up against the East Cobb or a Team Elite, you know, or San Diego Show or whatever, those teams traditionally have really good players.
Yeah.
So you take our team and their team, and we play against each other. A high level game is taking place, and that elevates these kids' game to play against that level of competition. And you can hate travel baseball all you want or talk about all the negatives. You stay at home and play American Legion baseball now, which back when I was coming up, it was it.
That was it.
But now, I mean, you can't duplicate that the talent that's on the field when we play in East Cobb in a local situation. And I would challenge anyone that gets them ready for what they're going to see, whether it be in college or professional baseball.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, so when you're talking about playing that team that probably should be in a different tournament, you're playing them on a Tuesday night, what I saw, especially at the Wilson Premier event, is of teams that are inside that tournament, and it allowed for a much better product to be on the field. Did you see that as you went to these Wilson Premier events? Did you see just better talent, better teams that you guys competed against?
No question. I mean, Wilson Premier is trying to do it a little smaller. They're not trying to run big events.
Right.
And I have to be careful because, I mean, Perfect Game they've changed baseball for the better. I know a lot of people
sure.
would say, you know, maybe say otherwise, you know, but I think if they really look at it, you know, I think they changed it for the better. But you like Wilson Premier Classic, that the thing they run in the fall, I mean, it's strict invite only. You're not going to get a bad game.
That's right.
You know, but yes, I mean, but the thing in Atlanta, I mean, 395 teams, I mean, you're bound to run into somebody that's just not very good.
Right.
That's you right. know, I mean, it's just the format of it. I mean, I think the only way you change it is maybe you tier it A, B, C. Like this 100 team is the A group. This 100 team is the B group. This 100 team's the C group.
Okay.
And then you have three different champions maybe. And then you wouldn't run into that Tuesday game where, quite honestly, I mean, they come in to watch our hitters and we're facing 70 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And he can't throw a strike. I mean, there's a lot of pro scouts that gripe about, they can't evaluate that.
Mm-hmm.
These are just opinions and
sure.
You know, it is what it is.
Yeah. I want to go into recruiting with you because I know this is a hot button issue for you personally. And with the recent changes to the recruiting landscape, especially that's how it's going to affect a lot of your kids. But I know that when we talk about early recruiting, I know I can get you fired up. So I just want to talk about the recruiting a little bit and give you the opportunity to really just what are your thoughts on everything and the changes and what would you like to see done as it affects your kids that are inside your organization?
Yeah, I mean, I think what NCAA just did was a huge shout out that they're trying to help the early recruiting, mm-hmm. like from keep it from happening.
Mm-hmm.
But what I don't know if they really thought about or talked about, obviously I'm not in those meetings, is I don't know that anything's going to change, Sheets. I mean, I think what they just did, and they might find this out, and I could be wrong, and I hope I am, is I think you're going to see kids, ninth and 10th graders, that the obvious kid that is the stud, you know, or whatever, they're going to recruit to these SEC, Pac-12, ACC schools, and they're going to talk on the phone because they can still get on the phone. The coach can still get on the phone with the player. They just go through a middleman, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they call the middleman or text the middleman, have so-and-so call me. So that can still take place and they can still see them play. So they can evaluate the coach can evaluate the kid and then they can line up the phone call. And it's going to happen. These kids are going to start committing to these coaches. They never took official visit to the school. They never talked to the coach face to face. That is my biggest fear. And how ridiculous will that be?
Yeah.
I mean, I hope that the mom and dads can step in and not let that happen. You know, you talk to a lot of college coaches, they don't want these kids committing this early. I'm not going to mention names, but you know, there's coaches there that I know that I speak to regularly. They're in the ACC and the SEC. And they're like, we don't want to commit a freshman.
Yeah.
We don't want to commit. We don't want to do it, but
we have
they're
to.
Doing it.
Yeah.
They're doing it.
Yeah.
I don't want to be at this 15 and under tournament this summer. I want to be on the lake with my family.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I've already followed the 17-year-olds and the 16-year-olds. I don't want to watch a bunch of ninth graders play, but I have to because he's over there doing it. And
yeah.
I just think that if the only thing that they could have done maybe is just eliminate contact.
Mm-hmm.
Just eliminate it. Just don't let it take place at that ninth and 10th grade years. I think that would have been great. But that's just my two cents.
Yeah. Well, and again, getting guys that are out there in the midst with all the coaches and the players, and certainly adding you to our ABCA Travel Baseball Coaches Committee and having, you know, different opinions and ideas. And certainly from that group, we're hoping to really keep the pulse inside the national office of what's going on across every organization around the country, but also allow these conversations to happen, allow guys to have a place to really find new ideas or creative solutions or ways that we can keep growing baseball. Now, I want to ask this as we talk about success, and you guys obviously have a very successful program there with the Canes, and you've moved countless guys into college and professional baseball, and certainly there's a piece of that. You're helping families, you're helping players, but I'm just interested, Jeff, specifically to you, is how do you define success? How has that changed over the years for you?
Early on, you know, there always was that piece. I mean, when I first got into this, it was the instinct. When I first got into travel baseball, you know, I got into baseball to be a high school baseball coach. I didn't know what travel baseball was.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got into travel baseball, it was I wanted to help the kid. You know, you get to know the kids and, coach, I want to go to East Carolina, or coach, you know, I really would like to play at UNC Asheville or whatever the case may be. And we were set out to help that kid get there. Mm-hmm. And that was the first piece. But the winning thing when I was young was probably how, if you would ask me this question when I was 24 or 25, I would have said winning. We've got to win. We got to win this tournament. We've got to chase that ring and do that.
Right.
And that was it. Now, as I've gotten older, it's really relationships and developing people. And that's just being around other coaches older and wiser than me and listening to them. And then also just being in it and seeing our players and listening to them and letting them know that we care about them.
Sure.
You know, and the, well, we had alum, we have alumni weekends where 100 kids show up. I mean, and it's just that part of it to me is defining success. Did we help them become better people when we had them?
Mm-hmm.
Now there is the winning part. There is the winning part, no question. And, you got to teach kids how to compete, but I really feel like also the baseball side of it is you take last year's team, you know, Anthony Siegler, Nick Northcutt, Joe Gray, Austin Becker, Xavier Edwards, and I'm missing Landon Marcel. Those are six kids I just named that could get called, their name called on the first day
mm-hmm.
of the draft. And so we had, we have 5 months with those kids, and I feel like we owed it to them to try to help them get ready for what's next.
Wow.
As a baseball player, I mean, it's coming. You know, there's a short window. It's a short window where this thing's going to be a job. Mm-hmm. And did we help you at all? And if the answer was no, then we really failed those kids. And I think if you asked each and every one of them, they would all tell you that, man, that was some of the best times and development I ever had as a baseball player. And that's what I'm looking for.
That's great. You mentioned this, you know, making the decision to get into coaching. And I want to really spend some time there in those early years, because you certainly could have done a lot more than just run an elite travel organization, Jeff. Very sharp. I really enjoy our conversations and our communications. And you could do a lot of things. And I'm just interested, what motivated you? What really struck you? Was it the experience with your high school coach, Coach Holcomb? Was it spending time with Coach O'Neill? What was it that motivated you to, you know what, I could do this for a career and be a lifelong coach?
Well, I appreciate the compliment, first off.
Sure.
You know, I knew I wanted to be around the game as long as I could be. I knew I wanted to coach, especially when playing was out the window. And I learned that, you know, in my early 20s that playing was out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I got a job at 22 years old. I graduated 22 years old in May, did college in 4 years. My dad said, that fifth year, man, you know, if that happens, good luck. Cause you're going to be paying that whole bill. But, anyway, I doubled up on classes, made sure I got that thing done in 4 years. And I was lucky enough. I got a PE job at Purnell Sweat High School in Pembroke, North Carolina. You know, people were graduating and, you know, a lot of kids graduate now, they don't have a job,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I got that job. I had to coach some football, which I knew I'm a huge Abbott football fan, but I'm not a football coach.
Sure.
But I coached football, and then I was the head junior varsity baseball coach at Purnell Sweat, 22 years old. And Jerome Hunt, who's still there, who was the head coach then, is now the AD now, gave me a shot. I mean, 22 years old. And I dove right in, gained a lot of valuable experience to be a head coach. And I got to be involved with the varsity practices at 22 with him. And he, at the time, I think he had 15 years experience, and we had a really good varsity team that year. And he let me travel with the varsity team and gained a lot of experience. And then I went home for Christmas break that year, and I ran into a former high school teammate who was 3 years older than me at a restaurant. And he said, "And what are you up to these days?" And I told him, he said, "Well, it's funny you say that. I'm running AAU baseball out of Disney World, out of the Disney Wide World of Sports." He's like, I run all the baseball tournaments down there. He's like, "Why don't you put a team together, come down here. He goes, I'll waive your entry fee. I'll get you some hotel rooms. Cause I kept telling him, like, there's no way I can do this.
Yeah.
I don't have, you know, it's Christmas. You're telling me to get down there in June. I mean, I don't have uniforms. I don't have a budget. I don't have players, you know, and he's just trying to make it easy for me to get down there. So I thought about it and I'm like, you know, I'm going to do this. So at that point I set out, you know, with a guy I played college ball with by the name of Dan Barzo. He's a pitcher. He's from Chicago. And then my best friend in high school, who was our second baseman, JP Hansen, and I asked them to come help me. And we were off to the races. We decided to call it the Hurricanes.
Okay.
And I probably took five kids from my high school team. And then I got after it. I started making phone calls to anyone and everyone I knew. And we did the 16 and under division. So I was looking for sophomores in high school that were varsity impact type players.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, lo and behold, got some good ones. Seth Maness, who had some time in the big leagues, and Cody Wheeler, who made it up to AAA with the Orioles and had a great career at Coastal. Deck McGuire, you know, who is in AAA with the Reds right now. But we got some good players on board. And we practiced at UNC Pembroke. We put them up for 3 days. We put them up in the dorms.
Okay.
And then we van down. We raised money for those uniforms, car washes, the whole nine yards. Charged the minimum. I mean, I couldn't call up people and say, hey, man, it's going to be this. You know, it's going to cost this. So,
yeah.
You know, that was out the window. It was like, I'm begging people to play, right?
Humble beginnings.
No question. We were doing car washes to get the uniforms done. I'm begging this parent that is helping me, hey, you have a couple extra $100. I really want to get this pair of pants or whatever. And that's what it was. And Coach O'Neill gave us the dorms and we practiced for 3 days. We bussed down to Florida and this is it. I mean, this is our first venture and
we're doing
we go 10 and 0.
Wow.
And, we lose in the national championship game to Chet Lemon's Juice.
Wow.
But I remember after that game, I was just like, this is certainly not it. Like, this is, we're going to keep this club together and we're going to keep playing. And they were hungry to do so as well. And that's kind of how that started.
That's really refreshing. I had no clue how the whole organization ran. I don't think any of our listeners did either. That's pretty
well.
Cool.
No, I mean, I was a high school baseball coach through and through. I had visions of coming home to Virginia, where my family was, and getting a job up here and just staying here. But the travel baseball thing, I kind of evolved with it.
That's so cool! Wow. Now you've given us and pulled back the curtain on exactly what's motivating you to coach and your why to go to the ballpark each day and build these teams. But I'm interested: how are you still challenging that each day? Because you're out competing for championships. It's not like you're running through a bracket and hoping to make the top 20. You're going to be in the finals. You're going to be close. You're going to be out there ring chasing, quote unquote. But I'm interested in how you're still challenging that why to help families. And how are you still learning and growing? How are you still evolving as a coach even today?
To go back to what you said, you know, trying to win, you know, I find a ton of pleasure in getting these guys from all over the country in a room together. Some of them have egos. They all come from different backgrounds,
mm-hmm.
but forcing them to get on the same page as one unit and really go out and compete, because they're going to compete the rest of their lives, whether it be in baseball or in their jobs or whatever, you know, and being able to see that come to fruition with a group of guys is still to this day one of the most rewarding things in life. But, you know, to learn and to grow, I can't be around enough people that are older and wiser than me.
Mm-hmm.
And have those conversations, listen to their stories. And, I think it's always fascinating to hear different approaches to the game, how different people run practices. I think like anyone, I have certain people in my Rolodex that I like to call regularly,
mm-hmm.
To ask them what they think about different things. Even to go back to the ABCA, I think going to the ABCA has been a huge resource for me. Just listening to the different things people have to say. And, you know, obviously hearing the talks there, but I'll tell you, some of the best learning moments for me at ABCA are just sitting there at lunch off to the side, or coffee off to the side, with a coach.
That's right.
You know, and you can run into somebody, and the next thing you know, an hour and a half has passed.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not, you know, of course, you how's your family and this and that, how's your kids? But then it just dives right into baseball. Another thing that I do a ton of, and this might sound silly in a way, but I go watch a ton of baseball.
Sure. No doubt.
I just am obsessed with watching baseball. UVA is an hour and 10-minute drive from my house. The Raleigh-Durham area is 4 hours away.
Mm-hmm.
And just see as much college baseball as I can. I've dragged my wife out to spring training, I think, the last 3 years. You know, it's I can't see enough baseball at various levels. I'll go sneak out to a high school game, you know, and I think you learn a lot by just watching it.
You just walked right into my spider web watching the games that you have. And I was just talking with my wife last night, taking Cooper out to some more minor league games. I enjoy that. I think he enjoys seeing the action. But it's funny because the more that you watch, the more you learn. And the more that you just study and step back from the game, not be a fan, but just be a casual observer, you start to learn and start to see things differently, how the game moves, decisions that are made, pitches that are called. So going out and watching these games, Jeff, what's something that you saw recently that maybe challenged where you were at and something that you might do different moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I remember, and that just happens all the time, because when I go to baseball games, I watch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not interested in getting hot dogs and, you know, and I want to watch the game.
That's right.
I remember being at Vanderbilt. It was 2 years ago. Maybe three, and they were playing South Carolina, and I went to the whole series, and I sat, I mean, like three rows up, and was locked in the whole game. And I remember there was runners, on first and second. South Carolina had runners on first and second. Third baseman was even with the pitcher. He was even with the pitcher. I mean, almost all the way in. The shortstop had creeped almost all the way over to third base, and the second baseman was standing on top of the bag.
Gotcha.
And I immediately reached out to Jewett, Coach Jewett at the time,
yeah,
the next day. And I was like, what in the world was that bunt coverage? And he said, you know, it's just something we do. You know, we're basically forcing them to bunt the ball to the right side.
Yeah.
Because the third baseman is literally all the way in, and the pitcher is going to have the pitcher side. Also, he can bounce off and cover the first base side. But our second baseman is standing on top of the bag, holding the runner on like he's at first base. So we've gotten the runner to go back to second base some. He can't only get so far off. And then our shortstop is going to creep over to third as the play develops. I mean, you really increase your odds to get the force out there.
Yeah, sure you do.
So, I mean, if Vanderbilt's running that, then we need to be running that.
Wow.
You know, and it's something that we put in that summer, and I just attest that to just watching baseball.
That's,
you know,
awesome.
I never had seen anything like it.
No, I haven't either. I have to look for that. I want to see that in Arizona,
yeah,
this summer.
Well, if the situation arises, it's in our repertoire.
I'll call it from the ABCA hospitality tent. I'll get
we
that
actually
in the game.
We actually call the play Vandy.
Do you really? Yeah.
But God. it throws people off.
Sure.
I mean, at our level, I mean, they're like, what in the world? It's like, yeah, man, you want to bunt?
Yeah.
You better
right
bunt
ahead
to the first base side. Yeah.
We're going to roll up two, possibly three on this one. Take us into this, man. Open up hidden talents and hobbies. I think that's always a great question, because it really, we are baseball coaches, but some of us do things outside of what we do on the field. Can you open up things that you have, hobbies or talents?
Sure. I mean, I used to do a ton of cooking.
Okay.
And well, recently I felt like I got good at it. but you know, recently, my wife has kind of taken over the reins there, but that's something that I did and enjoyed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And feel like I got decent at it. I mean, hobbies, I try to get to the gym, you know, 5 to 6 days a week, and by no means am I trying to walk around with a bunch of muscle. I'm just trying to keep that belly off, you know.
Sure.
The older I get, and But I love to travel. Me and my wife and my two kids, we travel a ton. My neighbor has a regular joke going that, you know, we're never home, you know, and we're just constantly going here or there. And that's kind of our life. She grew up on the Eastern Shore of Maryland, which is a 4-hour ride. And there's, you know, beaches over there and water. And we at least get over there once a month to see her family. And not to mention, like I mentioned, the spring training trips. And
sure,
you know, I'm known for on a Saturday morning, we're drinking our coffee. We have no plans for the day. And I say, hey, you know, East Carolina's playing North Carolina today. You want to drive to North Carolina? She just looks at me. we make the trek with all four of us, but really enjoy the traveling piece.
That's awesome. And we were talking about this before we got recording. We're talking about the power of a podcast, and, you know, certainly if those were, you know, really flourishing 5, 6, 7 years ago, I think we'd both be in different places. But I'm always interested with this question of daily habits or routines. So things that you do each day that you think put yourself in a better place or help make you successful, but then resources you would share. If there's a book or a certain podcast you listen to, what would you offer our listeners?
One of the things I don't like about travel baseball, you know, is people have their games. They show up an hour before the game at so-and-so's location. And you'll see these kids flipping each other front toss or whatever to each other. No coach is throwing and their parents are dropping them off left and right with coolers. And that's one of the things I absolutely can't stand about travel baseball. One thing we do is we're privileged enough. We charter buses to all of our games. So we always find an offsite before our game. And we get a good stretch in. We take batting practice on the field. Our guys get a ton of ground balls. Mm-hmm. You know, our outfielders get, you know, fly ball reads off the bat leading up to the game. And, you know, I personally like to work with our infielders, hit them fungos and be involved, be as engaged as I personally can be in those pregame situations and practices. And I think it gets our kids more prepared usually than our opponent. Because nothing against most of our opponents, but most of our opponents aren't shelling out money for buses and paying the rental fee for a field to go do that before the game. But I just think it's so important that our kids get a real pregame situation leading up to a game, that the pregame situation that they're going to be given in college or in pro ball. But as far as resources, you know, the ABCA podcast, I mean, having the ability to just ride down the road and listen to different people talking about, you know, their approach to hitting or pitching or whatever the case may be, or just your dugout talk podcast that you have, and just learn more about people. Mm-hmm. That's made an impact. I mean, two books that I have read, and I don't read a ton, and I'd like to read more. And sometimes I think time just passes and, you know, I think we're all guilty of that. And, the Energy Bus, John Gordon,
sure.
One of my assistant coaches, Tim Lowry, who was coach at Cosby High School and he was a high school coach for 30 years, almost 500 high school wins. He introduced me to that book and he made the kids on his team read it. And, you know, I read it when I started reading it, I couldn't put it down. It was one of those things where I read it probably in a few hours.
Sure.
And I've gone back to it several times and I highlight different things in it and I use it all the time. And where he talks about energy vampires and guys that you need to keep off your team, you know, people that are always talking about the negative thing that's going on and they're not really worried about, you know, trying to figure out the solutions in life. And it's just always about the bad and the negative and really just not only want those guys on your team, but you really don't want those people in your life.
That's right.
Another book, Relentless, Tim Grover.
Sure.
You know, basically the gist there is that anything is possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, anything. If you're willing to work and put the time in, you know, it can happen. Mm-hmm. You know, when everyone else around you is giving up, you can keep going and you thrive under pressure. You know, you never let your emotions get the best of you and make you weak during times of pressure, you know, and being able to read that and then looking back at all the different athletes that he's helped.
It's impressive.
And then obviously following people on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you do it. I do it a lot of times for the information.
Yeah.
And you know, you never know, just strolling through there, you see things that are valuable.
There's no doubt. You know, this is an interesting question, and I love the answers that have come from it when we've asked our guests. And I'm going to ask you, Jeff, when you talk about your most humbling moment in coaching, what's the moment that comes to mind?
Yeah, and I actually was talking to my wife about this last night, and we were throwing out all these different scenarios of the most humbling moment in coaching. But she made a valid point, and I talk about it all the time, and it's really – every day I go to the field with the coaching staff I'm surrounded around.
Yep.
I'm humbled. I mean, to elaborate on that, we have a 5-man coaching staff. I get to coach with 4 coaches. 2 of them have coached over 30 years in high school, have 500 high school wins apiece. Tim Lowry at Cosby High School, Greg Connor at Powhatan High School, both in the Richmond, Virginia area. And then Jason Mills has been coaching 20 years. He's got 350 wins. And then Tom Willoughby, I was the best man at his wedding. We're right around the same age. And he's been coaching at Pine Forest High School in Fayetteville, North Carolina. And they're in the state playoffs every year. Mm-hmm. Even the years that he doesn't have much talent, he finds ways to get them to win. And Coach Jason Mills at D.H. Conley, he's won state championships, like I mentioned, 350 wins. I mean, when I walk out to practice or I go to coach a baseball game, there is 1,500 high school wins surrounding me every time I make any move. So, I mean, that is just, yeah. How fortunate am I?
Sure.
I mean, it's insane. I'm 36 years old, just turned it, and I've coached probably over 600 baseball games with these guys.
Yeah.
So it's humbling.
Gosh, it's great. So many teams, man, so many opportunities for things to come about, so many trips. But what are the funniest stories that even when you think about them today, they can still crack you up? What do you offer?
Yeah. We were riding home we were at Lake Point in Atlanta about 3 years ago, and we had just won a big game. Everybody's fired up, got on the bus. We're headed to get something to eat. Well, we had a strength and conditioning coach at the time by the name of Rob Helmick, and he did 10 years or more in the Toronto Blue Jays organization with minor league teams.
Okay.
So he walked away from that, and I put an ad up on NSCA, National Strength and Conditioning Association, and he sent his resume in, and I was like, holy cow, I mean, this guy's got 10 years professional baseball experience. This is a no-brainer. So we brought him in. We loved having him around. He's great for our players, but he is coming out of professional baseball now and then dealing with 17-year-olds.
Sure.
So, I mean, he's the 12-hour bus rides with the AAA Vegas team and you name it. I mean, so that's what he's come from. So we had just won a game, like I mentioned, and we're on a high note. And he's 3 rows from the front. And one of our kids had balled up a cup and fired it at one of what was meant to be for one of the players.
Yeah.
Well, it missed the player and hit Helmick in the back of the head. Well, I'm in the first row. He's 2 rows back and he is furious. Like, I mean, pissed.
Yeah.
And you got, remember now, I mean, he's not used to being around 17-year-old kids.
Like, sure.
You know, and so he stands up and he gets after them and they're just silent. And all he wants to know is who did it? who did it? Well, no one will say a word. Mm. And they just locked up. So then he goes and sits down. He is pissed. The situation is not resolved for him.
Yeah.
One of our assistant coaches I look at one of our assistant coaches. I said, find out. And I whisper over, I said, find out who did it. If you don't, and I have to, it's not going to be good.
Sure.
Assistant coach stands up. He basically gets after him again and says, listen, we just want to know. We just had a big win. We're going to get something to eat. We just want to know who did it. And the trouble of it won't be as severe.
Sure.
They just locked up. No one would say a word. I mean, they were sticking to it.
Hey, band of brothers.
They were not. It just wasn't going to happen.
Sure.
So I stand up and I said, all right, that's fine. I said, we are not going to eat. I was like, when we get back to the hotel, I was like, we're going to run suicides in the parking lot and all night long. I'm dead serious. All night long until you tell me who did this.
Sure.
Well, lo and behold, the racks above your seats, kind of like an airplane, yeah, where they open and shut. The thing opens up, the travel rack opens up, and our shortstop pops his head out of the rack and says, it was me, coach. The whole bus just erupts. I mean, everyone is cracking up. And he was up there the entire time, and I guess thrown the cup, and it overshot the player. Sure. And hit coach in the head. But it was just, I was speechless. I just laughed and sat back down.
Right. And you went and ate a nice dinner.
Yeah, well, we went and had a dinner. But sure. Yeah, that to this day, we always talk about that, how long that thing went on, and how the whole time he was sitting up there in the travel rack or in the luggage rack. That was pretty funny.
It's outstanding. I love this question, and I'm interested, Jeff, who you'll offer when you talk about your personal Mount Rushmore. And I think this is always a great reflection question for any coach. Who are the three or four people that have impacted you the most in baseball?
Yeah. Well, my dad, I would say number one. You know, just instilled working hard, you know, and obviously that piece where someone's believing in you when you're young, and you know, you don't know if you believe in yourself, but constantly being able to take me to the cage and throw to me every day or do this or do that, and just all those things really. And the truth of the matter is, when I was younger, I really wasn't that great of a baseball player at 10, 11 years old, but developed into a good little league player and a good high school player, and got to be a USA Today All-American in high school and hit home run the state championship game, which ended up being really the winning home run. Mm-hmm. And just being able to share those moments with my dad and being able to work hard, you know, and come from really a base of nothing, you know, those things, you know, that definitely hit home with me, mm-hmm, with him. My grandfather, probably the best human being I ever met. Just the kind of guy that you want to strive to be, you know, didn't use bad language, was a Christian, devout husband for 50 or more years, father, worked hard, you know, grinded 40-50 hours a week, provider, you know, all those things. Just always seemed like he was saying the right thing and doing the right thing, like lived by that example. You know, and I, you know, I just think you want to be like that, and you know, it's hard, you know, and
sure,
you know, with him, it just seemed like it wasn't, you know, and I think being able to grow up and see that, you know, just on the being just an excellent human being, and him providing that example definitely helped me a ton. And looking back on it, I think my high school coach, he was. Like I mentioned before, I mean, he had a winning tradition in place, and it was something that ninth grader, eighth grader, 10th grader, like we bought into that, mm-hmm, and it made us work hard. And he wasn't going to accept losing. Like that just wasn't going to be on his resume. And, you know, if you weren't willing to put in the time or produce, you know, you weren't going to get on the field.
Right.
You know, and learn that in high school, looking back on it now, I mean, that's really valuable. I mean, a lot of kids don't get that opportunity to play for somebody like that, and I think him doing that really made an impact. And I think you said we could say one more.
Yeah, sure.
Fourth.
Yeah,
Coach Billy Godwin, who was the coach at East Carolina. He's now a scout with the Yankees. You know, when I first got into coaching and I started the Canes, he just took such a personal approach with me. I remember being 22 years old, bringing my team to East Carolina, and he had me in the office, and we were talking baseball and inviting us over for barbecues, and that didn't stop, and we grew as friends. And I remember being at East Coast Professional Showcase, and I've always tried to scout those events and see what players and prospects are out there, and he knew that I was going to be there. Back then, I had no money. Like, we didn't have a budget. Him and Coach Jeff Johnson, at Chipola, they had a room and they offered me their floor, and I slept on their floor for 6 days there. You know, this is in the early years.
Sure.
And, you know, and he's always taken an interest in my family, and there's a genuine friendship there. I remember one year I was there and he had this three ring binder. It was just a huge three ring binder out on his desk. And it was every practice plan that he had ever done at any level. It was in this binder. And he said, I'll have my assistant run copies for it, and I'll have you one by the end of the day. He gave that to me.
Wow.
I can go on and on about him. It's just there was a genuine friendship. And I think that he's definitely impacted me in a lot of ways. And I've gotten a lot from him.
Gosh. Okay. You already started to uncover some of this, talking about the best people that you've been around and what qualities they possess, but also talk about the best players. So the guys that you really revere that have been part of your organization, how they were as teammates, but then obviously the people that they were, the best ones. When you think about, man, if you could script what the best player, best teammate would look like, what qualities would they possess?
I go back to, and we've had some really, really good ones here of late. I mean, the last 5 years, it's been absurd. But I go back to like 2009, 2010, 2008, when we were, you know, 10 years ago, 8 years ago. I guess maybe because I see what kind of people they've become now.
Sure.
You know, and three names that come to my mind are Jake Cave, who's in AAA with the Twins. Tyler Beattie, who's in AAA with the Giants, and he's been in the big leagues with the Giants, and Chad Pender, who's in the big leagues with the A's right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about Jake Cave, and I'll talk about him. Since he was young, I mean, his dad has been the head coach at Newport News Apprentice School for over 30 years in college level. So Jake grew up around the game. He didn't really, his dad molded him into a baseball player from a very young age. But Jake, you know, watching his work ethic and his attention to detail and his gym routine and his nutrition, you know, even then to now, I mean, we text each other all the time, you know, cause he's big into nutrition. I'll see him put something out on Snapchat about what he's cooking. And even to this day, we're trading recipes back and forth, and he's doing it geared to, you know, putting on muscle or whatever. And just how regimented he is really impressive. And he was a very good teammate when he was with us. He was win-win-win and made everyone else around him better. He did not like it when a kid rolled over a ground ball and jogged to first. I mean, he was the type of kid that even at 16, 17 years old, that would call a kid out. And as a coach, you know, I would let that happen.
Sure.
Just because of the respect that everyone had for Jake. I mean, if Joe Schmo calls you out for that, you know, it's like, what, you know, yeah, right. You know, but Jake had that clout because he did it every day. He led by example, and the players, if Jake spoke, players listened.
Yeah.
I mean, and then with Beattie, you know, his first year with us in 2009, we won our first perfect game national title. I think he threw two innings the whole week in Atlanta. That's it. And then the next year, he got significantly better. He ended up committing to Vanderbilt and all those things, and just watching him grow. And then the kind of person he is, I mean, him and his wife, and they have a podcast of talking about the Christian lifestyle that they lead. And
oh, wow.
And just watching him grow up to who he's become. And we had a kid here recently who they fell on hard times financially. Their family did, and even lost one of their sons to a sickness, and the hospital bills piled up, and they weren't going to be able to afford to play with us. And I floated that out, and Tyler was just like, what do you need? Oh, and by the way, you know, every year I want to sponsor a player that needs it.
Wow.
That financially needs it. So, I mean, he just gets it on so many levels. Chad, to speak about Chad, you know, a lot of kids nowadays, they're so caught up in the draft, or am I going to be on this East Coast Pro Showcase, or am I going to make the area code games or the All-American game, or am I getting invited to this showcase? Chad came to us as a sophomore. He got cut by a local travel team here in Virginia, the Richmond Braves. They cut him. He never sniffed any of those showcases or games. He didn't get drafted out of high school. Quite honestly, at Virginia Tech, I mean, they took him at the 11th hour, and there was a lot of convincing of them to take him.
Mm-hmm.
He showed up to us, and he was probably 140 pounds soaking wet. And just to watch, he just had that relentless attitude. I mean, when you watched him play, it was like, man, this kid's a really good player, and his attitude towards the game. And every time you saw him, he was just a little bit better. He got a little bit bigger, added a little bit more pounds. His dad is Chris Pender, who played in the Orioles organization, and his younger brother's Chase Pender, who was a star at Clemson and now with the Cardinals, I think in high A. But that family, I think, is just a testament to the way his father raised him. But he just never gave up. So went to high school, like I mentioned, didn't get drafted, went to Virginia Tech, ended up being an All-American, All-ACC by his junior year. I think he was drafted in the first or second round. I mean, this is a kid that, you know, high school kids nowadays think, if I don't get drafted out of high school, you know, I'm not going to play professionally. I mean, this kid had none of that. I mean, he's hit the longest home run recorded in the big leagues last year. He has just willed himself into this big leaguer.
Gosh.
And it's really cool. He's just a great person off the field. He's getting married in November. We're headed down to that, and you know, to see him get married in November, and super proud of him.
That's so cool. All right, man, you've made it this far, and we can never complete a show unless we ask this question. I think so many gems and certified audio gold have come from this question. We talk about the best advice you've been given, Jeff. So over your career, the best advice somebody offered you, but then what other advice do you have that you'll offer any coach paying attention to the show that might set them off on a better path?
Yeah. I think some of the best advice I've ever gotten, you know, it's okay to chase after the wins and the success, but if you're not content along the way and you don't enjoy the ride each and every moment, you're really shorting yourself. I mean, if you're just in this thing to win baseball games, you're never going to win enough. Mm-hmm. If you are in business to make money, you are never going to make enough. It's enjoying those moments along the way. And I think that as I've gotten older, I've kind of stopped along the way, and just simple things like, hey, we're at practice. Like, this is awesome. Just enjoy every moment of it. That to me is one of the best things that I've ever been told, as far as just being content on your journey. And not just always focus on that final prize. I guess if I had any advice, you know, I would challenge coaches, you know, that they don't know how much players look up to them, mm-hmm. How powerful their words are to them. I would definitely encourage coaches to take the time to get to know their players and show them some interest in their life outside of baseball. I feel like in my experiences, some of the teams, maybe not some of the most talented teams, but some of the teams that played the hardest for us might've been the teams that they knew how much we cared about them. And it's amazing how hard a kid will play for you if he believes in his core that you love him, you know? And I think that there's something to be said for that.
That's powerful. What a way to end the show, man. Again, so thankful to have men like you inside the ABCA, Jeff, but it's really great to be able to connect and really open this realm of travel baseball inside our podcast, connecting with a guy like you and your organization. And I'm just so thankful again you took some time out to join us. Jeff Petty, President and CEO of Canes Baseball. And Jeff, we look forward to seeing you out on the circuit this summer and wish you all the best of luck, man. Thanks again for jumping on with us.
Thank you so much, Chief. I've enjoyed it.
Thanks so much for dialing into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast and checking out another one of our Dugout Chatter episodes. Now, here at the American Baseball Coaches Association, we are here to serve coaches around the world. So let us know how we can help. Head over to our website, abca.org, for more information. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at ABCA1945. You can also find us on Facebook as well. And feel free to reach out to me directly on Twitter at CoachSheets3 or by email at sheets@abca.org. We'd love to hear from our loyal members and continue to find ways to keep growing this game together. As always, coaches, thank you for listening in and staying dialed into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. Until next week, coaches, keep growing, keep developing, keep challenging yourself inside this game. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.